Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way.
On this week's episode of the Marketing Stir podcast, Vincent and AJ go international to explore the world of localization and global scale marketing campaigns with Anna Mika Scott, Director of Marketing at Aclaro.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Stirista's The Marketing Stir. I am your host, Vincent Petrofessa, the Vice President of B2B Products and Partnerships here at Stirista. By the time you're listening to this, I'm getting close to the five-year mark here at Stirista, right? Almost 5 years. Feels like longer, but in a good way, in a good way. Ladies and gentlemen, June will be the five-year mark at Stirista. Let's talk about who Stirista is just for a second. That's all. That's the only advertising we talk about. But who are we? We are a marketing technology company. We own our own business-to-business data and business-to-consumer data. We help companies through our technology access that data to help them get new customers through our email platform, through our DSP. Email me, vincent@stirista.com. That is how confident I am. I just gave you my email address. The other thing I'm always confident about is my co-host. We missed him on the last episode, but I was still confident. He's always with me. He's always in my ear telling me what to do, whether it's good or bad. My CEO, ladies and gentlemen, he's looking, he's got an extra glow from his recent trip to Miami. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. AJ Gupta, what's going on, AJ?
Today is my first day back to work, so I'm glad I'm glowing because on the inside, I'm a little bit tired. So
yeah, but you're glowing today. And you know, by the time this comes out, you know, we're going to be spending, the good news is, yes, here's the bad news. I wasn't in Miami with AJ and the team. They were at Possible. Hopefully that went well for everyone there, the big conference out there, but it's May with AJ. That's what we have, the whole month of May with AJ coming up. That's the theme. There's a couple conferences we're going to. He's coming to New York. I am going to be, you know, hosting a few panels at the Battlefin conference, May 21st and 22nd. You know, my fearless leader here, he volunteered me for that, but I'm happy to be doing that. I'm happy. Shout out to Battlefin and our guest, the prior past guest, Tim Harrington, who runs a great show there. But yeah, we missed you, AJ. You know, what's new with you? Tell us.
Just got back from Possible. I have to say, I'm not getting paid for saying this, sadly. In fact, I had to pay to go. But it is an incredible conference. It's only the second year they've done it, and I think there were about 5,000 people there. So pretty good buzz they've created and generating marketing. But just the overall room and video production and stuff, it was next level relative to some of the other conferences we do. So impressive for anybody in kind of the data, media, CTV world, for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, that is why, you know, I'm not in that world a ton. Stirista is, of course, and, you know, our coworkers are, and they're there. So that's why I wasn't there, people, but a lot of people hit me up and I said, hey, go meet the great team at Stirista there. I dip my toe in that world, but we have some great experts here who focus on a lot of the media and CTV, but that's awesome. Shout out to Possible. We're giving you a free plug, Possible. Will it mean anything? Probably not. Who knows? We'll still have to pay to go there next year. But AJ, while you were missing, you missed some great guests that we had in the last podcast, and at least you're here though for another amazing guest. We keep doing it here at the Marketing Stir. Thank you all for listening. We have an amazing guest. I'm so happy that she agreed to be on the podcast. I enjoy talking to her, my fellow New York native, not New York City, a little bit outskirts. We'll get to that later on, but we're happy that she's here with us in New York. Ladies and gentlemen, she's the marketing director at Aclaro, Anna Mika Boslin. What's going on, Anna Mika?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to be here. I'm very excited to chat with you. Keeping busy as all other marketing colleagues, I'm sure, across the world.
I love it. I love it. And you've been to so many amazing places that you lived. You lived, you're from the Netherlands, right? You lived in London. And then to beautiful Long Island. I mean, it is beautiful, but it's not as nice as those other places. You know, how did that happen? Let's get into that first. I want to get into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Dutch, as you said, like from the Netherlands, born and raised there. At the time when it came around college kind of years, I was contemplating doing a specific course and I wasn't able to get in at the time. Really competitive. I'm like, hey, how do I get into this course in college? And they told me, you know, get something interesting on your resume, go travel, you know, do something that is unique. And at that time, I decided to go au pair and I had an option to go to the United States or the UK. And I actually chose the UK, not knowing that eventually I would end up in the US. So I did that and then met someone there. And then fast forward, I went to school back in the Netherlands and I did my, what it's basically a sandwich course, as they call it, a third year's old internship. So I was able to land an internship in London. And when I finished school, I was able to go ahead and work there after graduation. So that's how I ended up in London. And then fast forward, I don't know how many years, I'm not going to say actually. We had the opportunity to come to the United States through work. It was meant to be a two-year visa. The company, it's a global company. I'm not going to mention the name. It's a global incumbent telecommunications company in the UK. So you can just put that one and one and two and two together. And we never left. So we've been here since. But they were, I think, in the US headquartered in New York City, but there was a satellite office in Long Island. So yeah, that's how I ended up on Long Island and haven't, I've left since, but I haven't lived anywhere else since, yeah.
Yeah, it is a very interesting story. You know, and I'm wondering, that's kind of like, you know, you already answered our question, like sort of how you got into this field and how you kind of got into what you do now. But let's, you know, I skip right over it, but like for the listeners, I certainly know what you do, but talk about Oclaro and also your role there. And Amika, tell us about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that you were at Sarista for 5 years of org upcoming. I've actually been at Oclaro for 8+ years, not to brag, but it will be 9 later this year. Yeah, so actually the longest job of my career thus far. I joined in 2015. As you said, I'm the director of marketing. So head up everything marketing related. Oclaro is a, and I'm sure we'll go into kind of a little bit more for the marketing side in a bit here, but Oclaro is a translation and localization company. And in all honesty, when I saw the job and was interested in like, oh, translation, you know, like they get a document, they translate it, send it back. And yes, we can do that, but that's not really what we, at our core, what we do. So basically what we do is help enterprise companies that are headquartered, I would say, in North America and Europe, expand globally and really help them drive global growth. So one example I can give, and hopefully this relates to a lot of people, resonates with folks here, is you travel, right? Let's say you go to Spain, you go to the hotel and you pull up some streaming, you know, app on your phone or on the TV in the hotel room and everything is in Spanish. I'm like, oh, you know, I don't understand, you know, I don't speak Spanish. And then you're able to switch, right? Language picker, you switch it back to English and then your menu, UI, user interface, show descriptions are all in English, right? Or vice versa. That's kind of an example of what we do and how we create these localized customer experiences for our clients.
And tell us a little bit about, you know, what ground up marketing is and what it, how does it appeal to you?
Yeah. So I think, at least in my opinion, like, I think it's great. Like I see it as like starting a marketing function, right? And a demand gen engine from the ground up. And I think, of course, in the ideal world, we all like to start with a blank slate, kind of getting it set up as perfect as we can. So I think that kind of is a unique way of doing that with a company that's open, right, to doing that. In some cases, it will be with a startup that doesn't have a marketing function, or maybe that marketing function is a part of other people's functions, right? Like not a dedicated function, but sits with maybe with sales or elsewhere. So what I see as part of being that is like really building that marketing function up, like you would audit, like what have they been doing, right? To that point, if anything, what's working well, what's not working well. And then from there, you kind of build the, and of course, understanding the corporate goals and the corporate strategy, and like then putting a strategy together in terms of how we go to market, but also like what are the people, who are the people that we need in the department to make that successful? What are the processes? And of course, like the marketing, the MarTech stack. So yeah, and I think the other great thing about that, at least to me, is like really being able to see that value you can bring to the table to those companies looking to scale. And then also hopefully hanging around to see the results from it, which I have done in the past. So yeah, that's kind of like what excites me about, you know, getting in there at the right time and helping build that marketing function and demand gen engine.
Can you tell us a little bit about why localization is important to you?
Well, localization is our bread and butter, but I think like why localization is important for companies to consider is really staying competitive, right? At some point, some companies might be saturated in their domestic market. So localization, really developing and delivering these personalized, localized user experiences is really going to help them, you know, with market share and market advantage and competitiveness. So I think it's crucial for any company that's looking, right, to even stay competitive or even relevant, to be honest with you, at home and abroad. And in turn, you know, of course, it helps to expand their reach, their audiences, their markets and revenue. So I think any serious company that is looking to be a player in their industry would be looking at localization to stay relevant and grow.
And Enrico, you mentioned it a little bit before, enterprise, but who else, who are you marketing to? Talk to us about that, right? To who you're marketing, what type of companies can really utilize Oclaro?
Yeah, I love that question because arguably we could really sell our service to anybody, right? Looking for translation. So it's a huge, huge market, but I think being focused is really important, like a really honing in on what makes sense for our business and also kind of where we can add the most value for business looking to expand globally. So I'll backtrack a little bit. So I think like just from a marketing perspective, and I'm probably stating the obvious here, like we've done a lot of work around our ideal client profile, like ICP outlining, hey, where does it make sense to focus on, like what are growing sectors for us? You know, really thinking more long-term. And then who are the buyers at those companies where we can add the most value? Again, like with localization, the way to think about it is some companies are not mature in localization. They might just be thinking about localization. So maybe the marketing person, right, gets tasked with, hey, we need to launch abroad. Let's translate our website. You know, let's launch some global marketing campaigns. So that kind of falls on the marketing person. But like as the organization matures and is starting to expand into more markets, you know, sometimes that function gets not consolidated, but kind of headed up by a dedicated localization person that takes all the requirements from the enterprise and manages that for the entire organization. So that's definitely good to keep in mind and hopefully helpful, helpful to this conversation. But I think in a nutshell, like for Oclaro, the types of companies that we market to, it's really kind of enterprise companies. So I would say enterprise for us means, hey, organizations that are not starting from scratch, but have some maturity in localization, but really looking to kind of like amplify and ramp it up. They have budget, have the right funding stage to kind of like take that next step of global expansion. And then, as I said, we're focused on companies that are headquartered in North America and Europe, and really that are looking to grow globally across multiple, we call it language markets, right? And that could be a first launch. It could be expand, like they could already have a foothold in certain markets and looking to expand from there. And then also companies are looking to maintain, right, that competitive advantage in certain markets. So those, in a nutshell, that's kind of who we market to. I think we're really good at SaaS, right? Like software, like product localization. We work with marketing folks. So as I mentioned, like international marketing, we work with training and talent folks that have a need for e-learning, global e-learning. I would say, of course, the localization folks that need to really manage the entire localization efforts across the organization. And then the product folks, right? Like the people that are in charge of SaaS product that are continuously needing to localize, not only launching, but keeping that code up to date across a different market. So yeah, I think that's where we can add a lot of value.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. No, it's, I think it's a perfect market. Like you said, it's not the startup. It's, you know, kind of companies that are rolling and starting to expand and really, you know, have a need for that. So I love that explanation. So a lot of people on this podcast and in marketing talk about like doing more with less, right? So in your opinion, how do you drive efficiencies in marketing while meeting goals with that concept in mind?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think like even it's true, like in marketing, it's true. I think it's almost true across industries, geographies, and functions. I think we're all having to do more with less, like given like recent economic times and things of that nature. And I'm sure like our situation is not unique. I think the good thing with that too is like it ebbs and flows, right? For sure, that pressure is not going to go away. Like once we can demonstrate that we can do more with less, why would we do less with more, so to speak? So I think one thing I would call out, and I might have just mentioned it earlier already when we're talking about who we market to and a little bit in the intro, is like focus, right? Like arguably, yes, we could sell to anybody, like individuals, companies, but do we want to? Like, is that the right way to spend our time and investment? No. So maybe there's a step you can take to even further refine your focus, right? Put money where you see the most opportunities. I think being on the same page as a whole organization, what does it mean doing more with less? What are the outcomes that we're looking for? I think tying marketing, I'll go a little further. I would say tying in your SMART goals as an individual for the company, right? To the marketing goals, OKRs, and even tying those back to the corporate OKRs. So everybody's on the same page. What is expected in terms of results? Like who's accountable for the results and how do we measure the results? If you ask any of my team members, former colleagues, current colleagues, I'm very big on documented, repeatable processes. I think it's another great way to even discover efficiencies. So yes, you're spending some time there looking at that, but I think in the long run, it's just going to help you, one, align, but also I think set you up if you're looking at tech to solve your problems, it like just documenting repeatable processes before you look at tech solutions is a I think a good way to do that. For sure, in the last year or so, leveraging AI, like how can you at different fronts leverage AI, not only you know, getting kind of rid or automate mundane tasks, but how can it make your life easier? Where can you plug that in terms of like your day-to-day job, but also overall in your marketing programs? And then I think just being open to, you know, pitching in, like whatever level you're working at, like just making sure you're a team member and, you know, like be open to pitch in whenever you need to and provide that mentorship. So I think maybe those are some of the ways I would overcome, and we are doing more with less. And I think like one other big thing is like demonstrating the value of marketing. I think oftentimes, at least in my experience, I think a lot of people, I call it everyone knows marketing. Like sometimes we're in a hard position to having to justify marketing or doing marketing on marketing. But I think it's also important to let the organization know what the role is and what the successes are. And I think with that, sometimes also you get more visibility and potential, so more budget to do the things that you want to do.
What are some of the marketing trends that you're seeing that you're paying attention to?
If I may, like just maybe stepping back, like that's one of the, I think, most interesting things, like think of marketing, it's always changing, right? Like it's always evolving and it's never stagnant. At least in my opinion, that's what makes me excited about it. I think I wouldn't call AI a trend for sure. Like it's here to stay, but I think maybe trends in AI for marketing, right? So for us in the localization industry, it's like, hey, how does a buyer perceive AI? How do they want to use AI in their day-to-day? Like how do they see us using AI in localization, right? How can we use AI in marketing programs? And we're doing that today, obviously, to some degree. like our social media platform has capabilities to rephrase social media posts using AI, right? Like right in the tool, like automated captioning and, you know, just different video platforms that allow you to take a PowerPoint and create a video out of it using AI. And I think also applying AI in the day-to-day, like how can it make your life easier? How do you kind of get rid of mundane tasks? I, for one, definitely use ChatGPT to come up with ideas for content briefs or keywords or summaries. So I think like leaning into that is really helpful. And then, as I mentioned, like for us really, and really it's not just us, but in localization, you know, when AI first kind of like reared its head, so to speak, it's like, hey, what does that mean for the industry? We no longer need translators. We put everything through Google Translate. No, it's going to be a helpful tool just to make the humans better, but humans are always going to be at the core of what we're going to be delivering. But hey, how can we leverage AI into providing our clients with the best solutions at the best price, at the best speeds? So yeah, I think like those trends, I think are really of interest to me. And I think also just coming back to the industry, like, hey, what kind of longer term impact will that have on the industry, and kind of keeping an eye out on that and, you know, like making sure how we can stand out in that market as well with different AI solutions.
Here's a fun question for you that we like to ask all of our guests. So I'm sure you get a lot of LinkedIn messages that you have to ignore, but you know, what's a message that really makes you angry, and what's one that you like and you'll actually respond to?
Yeah, I love that question. I do get a lot of LinkedIn requests and emails. I don't really get angry. I will chuckle sometimes. But I'm like, oh, no, that's maybe not what I would do. But maybe a few that stand out, if I may. I think the one that you asked the one that I don't like or like? Which
both of them.
Go first? Both?
Start okay. With the one you don't like.
Okay, yeah. So we can end on a positive note, right? So the one that I find funny and see right through, and I wouldn't respond to, is your boss told me to contact you. That'd be number one, because I know they didn't. They didn't tell you to contact me because they wouldn't. And then I would call it the other one, and apologies, I call it the kind of the private investigator stalker approach, where the person is like over-personalizing their outreach. So I think they've done so much background research that I feel like they're standing outside my window looking at me, you know, on my laptop working. So I think like personalization is great, but maybe don't go overboard with, hey, I saw you running in the park, and you know, it's a little creepy. I think the ones that I like are, to your phrase earlier, kind of like sipping their own champagne, is if somebody reaches out to me with a problem that I'm looking for a solution for at the moment, and they come in right at the right time and tell me to have a, you know, a fix for it. And it's happened to me a few times. And even if I hadn't considered them before as part of like my due diligence, I'd always included them. Because like, if you can really demonstrate that you know how to find the people that are looking for your solution, I think that's just a great, like that just builds a lot of trust already right out of the gate. So yeah.
I like your breakdown there, Annemieke, because there's most people, when they answer that question, they say, well, do your research, learn a little bit about me and personalize it. But and you, I love where you took it. You're like, but not that personal. If you're like, you know, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I saw you order that latte again with that scone. Yes. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute, man. What are you doing? You know, yes. Are we talking about data still? Like, what's going on? What are you doing to me? Yeah.
It's a little creepy. Yeah, that is creepy.
The creepy factor. I love it. I love it. before we get to the wrapping this up here and getting to know you a little more personally, as we do on this podcast, I have one more question about localization there. So, how is localization different from simple translation, and why is that important? I just wanted to ask you that.
Yeah. I love that question. I think my colleagues, with all due respect, probably cringe at the term simple translation, because no such thing exists, to be honest with you. But it's all good. That's what we're here for. So I think they can both be quite complex, right? But I think the way to look at it is localization is really the overall strategy, right? Like the global growth strategy or program that encompasses a lot of different things, which translations is one component of, if that makes sense. And then translation itself has a lot of different flavors too, and it kind of lives on a spectrum. So we talked a little about AI earlier, right? So on one side, we have maybe content that is kind of low visibility, low risk, that can go through an approach of, you know, AI translation, but with a human component that kind of reviews it. And on the other side, and this probably will resonate with marketing folks, is what we call transcreation. That's really like a creative linguist in market that will reimagine like slogans and taglines. So the way to think about translation is like this spectrum, and depending on kind of your business criticality, you would pick one over the other. And when you think about localization program, right, it can have a lot of different components. It could be, as we talked about earlier, software strings. It could be collateral, right? It could be multimedia. So like in large organizations, there'll be different approaches applied to different types of content. And then localization itself, the way to think about it is really making the entire user experience culture specific. So it's not only text translation, but it's also your graphics, right? Your menu items, your currency, your forms, and things of that nature. So that's really the difference. So localization is kind of the overarching concept strategy, and then translation is a component of that.
Yeah, no, thank you. I was kind of wondering that myself. And don't call it simple, people. If you take anything away from this podcast, do not call it a simple translation. It's not. It is not. So, Annemieke, as we get to know you, we're already talking about, you know, where you're from and where you were living. You know, tell us about some of your hobbies, what you like doing. And I think you and I were talking, you're also, you know, continuing some education of yours as well, right? So I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. Caveat, people, please don't use this information to reach out to me in any overly personalized fashion.
Yeah, please don't. Don't say simple translation, and please don't stalk her. Do not stalk our guest, please.
Yeah, so a great question about fun. I think maybe it's a little for fun and therapy, but I live really close to a New York State park, which I love, and I love getting some green therapy and clearing my head by walking, jogging, and running. I've been told I can't really walk. Like, I don't stroll, but I have a pretty decent speed. I'm a brisk walker. So there'll be times I walk, and there'll be times I jog, times I run. Love that. And then I had my start in public relations way back when. And we had a goldsmith as a client we were doing the PR for, and I went to her gallery in London and was just amazed by the work she did. So as a kind of a creative outlet, I started taking classes in the evening when I still lived in London and picked up the hobby of silversmithing, not goldsmithing, although I do that a little bit too, but really silversmithing. So a great creative outlet, and it's great that you can kind of imagine something and end up with an end product made, you know, handmade. So love that. And then I think you said earlier, love to travel, lived in a few different places, but also just love to travel, meet different people and eat different foods and experience different cultures. So the second part of your question, please remind me.
Just continuing education as well. I remember, you know, you're, like you said, just, you know, continuing education, just hobbies, what you like to do for the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I'm just a curious person by nature. So I'd like to kind of figure things out, if you will. So, I'd love to learn, like, as I said, like traveling, love to learn about new cultures, but also on the professional side of things. Some things I'd like to stay on top of, like, you know, marketing is ever evolving. So like for day-to-day job, like, you know, making sure that you stay on top of latest trends. I think like if you're in a leadership or management position, like tapping into other folks, like round tables or taking some courses around, hey, how can you best support be a mentor, but also even a mentee in your organization, learning from other folks. I think inspiring other people and also being that resource for other people as well. And I think, you know, always be prepared for, you know, your company to scale and how you can play a role in that as well. And I think one other big thing that is kind of nice about, like, Clara came up with this mentor-mentee program is also getting visibility and I think like closer collaboration with other folks. Like sometimes we tend to all be in silos and I think like breaking those down is really important. I think even with education and learning and like, you know, talking to other colleagues and tapping into their expertise kind of can help break those down to a certain extent. So, yeah.
I totally agree. I love it. That smithing, is that what?
Yeah, like a smith, a silversmith. Yeah,
I love it. Just like creating a different like pieces, like a jewelry or like items to use, like an ashtray or
It's all jewelry. Like
all jewelry. Oh, okay.
I make jewelry. Yeah, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, no functional items. I don't do that.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is for bling.
Only pretty things.
This is for
only
bling only. Yeah.
Only bling.
Not
only
bling. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And Amika, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for taking some time out with myself, AJ, and the Marketing Stir family. This has been amazing. Check out Aclaro, ladies and gentlemen, the marketing director, and Amika Boslin. I'm Vincent Petrofessa. That is the glowing AJ Gupta. This has been another episode of the Marketing Stir. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@stirista.com.